Religion is supposed to be about peace. It's supposed to be about community. It's supposed to be about love.
Zagreb.
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 This is Between Pages with Mike and Nuala. This week it's Sarah Novich, Girl at War. I would say this book's about perception now, because we started off talking about Sarah Novich as perceiving the world differently because her first language is American Sign Language. We talked about perception of war. You know, I think this book, at essence, it has the spirit of perception in it. And
Let me tell you first what I expect at the beginning, that it's more that she's going to talk more about political views of it as well. I'm not saying I miss that. I like that she didn't do it. For example, she didn't talk about Tito a lot.
Yeah.
Because Tito was a communist, Yugoslavia, everybody loved him. He was a big, I'm not going to say dictator, but he was a leader of Yugoslavia when I was growing up. Well, he died 81, I was born in 84. But when I was growing up, everybody was still talking about Tito, communism was still there, blah, blah, blah. It was huge. It's a little bit post-Tito, true, but she didn't talk about a lot about Milosevic, which was the president there, and Tudjman, which was president there.
Right.
Not a lot of that.
She didn't even talk much about that rebel leader that you mentioned earlier. I don't remember his name.
It was just when she was
But it was just in passing that there was a sign about him. And
yeah, it was in a, no, it was in a safe house at the end. When she was there, there was a chair that was saving for, I don't even know his name, Gotovino or something like that.
Well, she didn't even talk about the politics of splitting up the countries that much. It was just a fact.
When I saw this, I was like, I was hoping she's not going to talk about it.
Yeah.
And I'm glad she did not.
It was very journalistic in the true sense of journalism.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, modern journalism is very politically fueled, but the old sense of journalism was you talk about the facts and you leave them as that and you let people make a decision on their own. I felt like she very much let me make a decision on my own. She basically said, no sides are right, no sides are wrong.
Yeah, and that's why the Girl at War is the perfect title for it, because that's what this book's explain about.
She's at war with herself internally.
Yes, it's got nothing. She's not showing this book, or she's not writing or telling us that what this war is about, or why is this happening. She's trying to figure it out. What the hell is going on? She didn't even mention how many countries or state Yugoslavia had.
Right.
Which is, it's unnecessary, because she's talking about her, you know, it's a story about what...
About a person.
Girl at war. And I think she did a great job with this.
Yeah, I really like that. I really appreciate that she didn't... It didn't feel like she had an agenda.
No.
You know, sometimes you read a novel and you go, this person is trying to convince you of something.
Of this and this, yeah.
She was just presenting...
Let me tell you this, it's on 174... When she's describing, she came back to Croatia, right? And I put two notes down. The first one was that I would love to know what time that was. Meaning when. It was 1999, 2001, 2000.
When she came back?
Yeah, I guess it was after 9/11.
It was after 9/11.
Yeah, so it should be like some...
2001.
Yeah, yeah. But I kind of miss that, you know, just remind me a little bit. That, but it didn't bother me that much, but I would love to know.
Yeah.
It's 174. Said, a young man in a Dynamo jersey flagged down his weary fiance and left her off the floor in their embrace. It's important that she stated up Dynamo, because this is a soccer team in Zagreb.
Okay, I had no clue what that was.
That's what I wanted to tell you, that this is super important that she's... Because she could just say jersey, you know.
Right.
But Dynamo jersey, that's different.
She's describing something
there is
particular.
Dynamo, there is Hajduk, which is a big team too. Hajduk, Dynamo, I'm not a big soccer fan, but I know this shit a little bit. And this is huge, like, you know, I... Because soccer is huge in all of the Europe, you know.
Right.
People hate each other because of the, you know.
It's a little bit like religion.
It's like, it's even more, you know. It's even more because it's every Sunday.
Right.
Well, religion, it's every Sunday too.
Yeah.
So that's, I just wanted to point it out that this is important, and I like that you said Dinamo Jersey, you know.
Sports replacing religion is a perfect example of that. There's bright lights, you know, you're drinking beer, you're eating food, you're eating the greatest food in the world, you're watching people just go at each other, especially football, you know, where they're like so violently tackling each other and you're
American
all heated
football
up.
Or real?
Yeah, American football. Okay. Yeah, real one. We call that soccer.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, and even soccer. Soccer can get pretty rough. But, you know, people are so driven by these, you know, kind of desires and these appetites in this. And they're satisfied. After Sunday, you go back to work and you work out your week and you're fine with it and you complain a little bit. And you just wait till next Sunday when you can get back to the game.
Yeah. I do agree about the sports, about the, not just sport, but generally as entertainment stuff. That it's a mind controlling. It's not mind control. But it's like it does give something. But the religion, it's replacing religion. You're right. And
people rather be well fed and content and go home to a comfortable place than deal with the realities of what the world really is.
Reality doesn't. It exists, but it's just pushed away. Because we think we can do nothing about it.
And that's what she talks about when she's in New York City and, you know, war's going on across the sea, but it happens over there. It doesn't happen here. So
here.
I don't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
It'll take care of itself.
Yeah.
Before we move away from religion, there's a quote on page 264 where she says, "Emotional attachment to the church had always just felt beyond me. Religion, I'd assumed, would make more sense when I grew up." I felt the same thing when I was a kid, because I grew up Catholic, and I went to, you know, I did my confirmation, I went through all the motions, you know, what is it, like the
sacraments,
yeah. Did you grow up Catholic as well?
Yeah, but I only went the first thing, first commission,
communion.
Or whatever.
Yeah. So I went through all that stuff, but it just felt like something you did. It was never really...
You did it because it was, because everybody did it.
Yeah.
That's what I did it. Yep. But then later on, when I grew up a little bit, like I was 10 years old, I was like, look, I'm not doing this.
And not to say that I'm not spiritual, necessarily.
It doesn't. Religion,
I think spirituality is an internal thing, you know.
Yeah, I don't think being spiritual, if you're not following, if you don't follow any of the religion, doesn't mean you're not spiritual.
Right.
I'm super spiritual.
Yeah.
I meditate. I do this, I do that. It doesn't mean I'm following any of the religion, you know.
I agree.
Even atheists, they're spiritual.
In some kind of sense,
kind of sense.
Yeah, they're passionate about something.
Yeah, they're passionate about atheism. And you know what is the saddest thing? The atheist, this is religion already there.
It's one of the most aggressive religions.
Yeah.
Because they want to just convert you. Yeah. Oh, you're wrong.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's...
Well, some religions want to... Christians want to convert you, too.
That's something my wife Emily always says about, you know, she says...
Are you talking about Scientology or just a science?
Science.
As well?
You know, we make these discoveries and, you know, get people behind it. And then 10 years later, you find out that research was wrong. But everybody agreed with it at the time. So, you know, it's a matter of perception. And there's some things that are factual, of course.
Yeah,
there are some realities.
Yeah.
But to get those realities cracked... You know, it's all a matter of perception.
Mm. Yeah, and, you know, I made a peace with myself not to believe anything.
Right.
That, I'm not going to say anybody said, not to believe, only believe 10% of the shit I hear from the TV, from the radio, or from the newspapers.
Yeah.
And obviously, I don't watch TV and I don't listen to radio.
Because everybody has an objective.
Yes, but I only believe 10% of it, you know. Same goes to religion, you know, and same goes to science.
On page 253, when she's a child soldier, she talks about, you know, she notices people, or she remembers noticing people back in Zagreb walking out of the churches on Sundays and things like that. But she says, you know, the concept of a 7-day week of time organized.
Mm-hmm.
So simply and concisely was just completely foreign to her at this point, because she's just living every day. She's trying to survive every day.
Yeah.
And to know whether it's Sunday or Wednesday doesn't really matter. And that's the reality. That's the true reality.
Yeah.
You know, that's a societal thing. We all have to accept it and say, oh yeah, today is Wednesday.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's not real.
And it doesn't, but it doesn't, in reality, it doesn't exist.
Right.
You know.
That's interesting to think about.
So what hit me, because I thought that I'm going to like cry through this book or whatever, you know. But like in page 257, that was a hard, like when her parents die, because she hid it there, she made a transition. I didn't feel like, oh, that's so sad. My emotions were not triggered.
I felt the same way. It wasn't a very emotional book.
No, I was expecting that it will be. And yeah, I'm not saying it should be, but
that scene when her parents died, I felt the same way.
Yeah, it didn't trigger the emotions that I was expecting, and maybe that's why I was missing the little bit of stretching out a little bit.
Yeah.
But then some emotions came when she's already back and explaining whatever, and she came to Lucas after her parents got killed. She came to Luca's house, and they're sitting with her mom and Luca at the kitchen or whatever. And Luca's father comes in and look at Anna and said, "Hey, how's it going?" or whatever. And he looks at Luca's mom and said, "Did you call her parents?" That was the most emotional part that I read. It was like, oh shit, you know, that kind of hit me.
Yeah.
Because he didn't know, and he was like, you know, I was imagining myself in that situation as being her.
Right.
Being like, oh, he's talking about my parents. You know what I mean? That would hit me at that moment.
Yeah.
And that was the most emotional part of it, which was not even that emotional.
Right.
That I was expecting that would be. Not even when she figured out that Petar died.
Yeah.
And when...
Because he sacrificed himself to...
For her. We don't know if he died then, right at that time.
But that's what I assumed. Yeah,
I assumed too.
Yeah.
And it's good she didn't reveal that, if you ask me. Because then that would...
That did make it more emotional. Because in Anna's mind, she's thinking, he must have died and it's my fault.
Yeah. And she's going to contact Marina.
Yeah.
And, you know...
But, you know, I still wonder if that has something to do with her first language being sign language, because I don't know. I don't want to speak out of turn or anything, but I imagine sign language, you know, when we communicate with each other, it's very emotional. I'm moving my hands around.
I'm moving my shoulders.
Yeah. My face is changing certain ways. Mm-hmm. My eyes are communicating with you. There's all this body language involved. You know, with American Sign Language, and, you know, you watch the translators, like, on TV and stuff, but it's mainly the hands, and you're paying attention, you're focusing on the hands, and that takes a lot of energy to focus on the hands and interpret that, and it's really hard to, I would think...
Because hands movement in the ASL, is it
ASL? ASL, yeah.
Hands movement is that voice.
Yeah.
But that you can do, you know.
It's not as robust, because when I'm looking at you and speaking, I can pay attention to your face and focus on your face and then get, you know, the body language as a supplement. Mm-hmm. Whereas ASL it's mainly all body language.
Yeah.
But so I wonder if there's something, not saying that there's lack of emotion, but there's a different kind of emotion there that maybe doesn't translate well to English, you know, American English.
Maybe that's something.
Maybe that's why we noticing this, right. That this would bring, that we didn't have that much of emotions.
Right.
Something that she said that kind of, I wasn't sure how to take it, and you know, it's about immigration, and you've immigrated to this country, and I wonder if you have a different perspective of it. But it's on page 196, and she's talking about she was trying to think of an American superstition, and she couldn't think of one because all the ones she could think of were imported from Europe. Mm-hmm. And she says, maybe a country of immigrants just never got around to taking the less desirable parts of their cultures, putting them together. Or life in the New World wasn't difficult enough to retain a belief in magic, mm-hmm. or a belief in, you know, the superstitious things. But me, you know, I think of you coming here to the U.S., or of our friend Ario, who immigrated from Iran. And, you know, yeah, maybe you guys aren't facing wars and things like that, but life isn't easy. It's still difficult. Mm-hmm. You know, you, for example, you have to go back to school because your degree from a Slovenian college mm-hmm. is not accepted here. You know, Ario had to learn English firsthand, and I'm sure he dealt with some, you know, he's Muslim. I'm sure he dealt with some issues with that, yeah. You know, especially the time he came over. It was around the time we were talking about earlier, with wars going on over in the Middle East. You know, so would you say that life as an immigrant in the New World isn't so bad, that, you know, that's why a superstition wouldn't stick around?
Like, cause she's basically saying if the life is so easy here that superstitions don't matter.
Yeah.
Perhaps it is easier, but what is easier, you know? It's not easier the way, money-wise maybe it's easier, education-wise it's easier. You know, I didn't came from a country that, it's not a third world country that I came from, you know, so...
I think about people, too, who come here and maybe they were a doctor in their home country.
And no, they're not.
And now they have to cook fries in the back of McDonald's.
Yeah, in this case, this is not cool.
Yeah.
It shouldn't happen that way. I think any immigrant, it's not easy. Because I think in some cases she is explaining that it's hard for her as a war child or a girl at war to be an immigrant. But I think it's hard for any immigrant, you know.
Yeah.
Imagine leaving your home country or your home.
Right.
You know, for example, I'm 7-8 hours away from my mom with plane.
Yeah.
And in order for her coming here, she needs a bunch of paper to come here. You know, that's one thing that it's not easy.
So maybe that would be better said as a lot of people come here, you know, a lot of immigrants come here from looking for a better life for themselves.
Right.
You know, some people come from war-torn countries as refugees. Some people come as immigrants trying to get away from
wars or
tyrannical government, oppressing government. And so maybe those experiences, you know, make them believe a little less in magic. And they bring that lack of belief with them, but they also bring their stories. So those superstitions, you know, we still have them, but they're just a funny thing you say. We don't actually believe it because we know how hard reality really is.
And if you put it in this perspective, only for the superstitions, then yes, maybe because we have different kind of experience. We go through something differently than we go back in the old country.
And you had to make the hard choice to leave that life behind, whether it's forced because of war or
just by choice.
Just economically, you want to make more money or you want a better life for your kids or whatever.
If my opinion about superstitions is that it can hold you down in some cases.
Yeah.
You know, it can hold you back. Hold you back, not down. It can hold you back in stuff that you want to do but you don't want to do. I'm exaggerating, obviously, right. But, you know.
Because if you do that, this bad thing will happen to you. Bad.
So maybe these superstitions were made for, like, controlling somebody.
It's explaining something you don't understand. But yeah, I think, you know, we started with language, started talking about language. We could wrap it up with that. There was some. She talks a lot about language in this book, hearing language, yes, and communicating with language. She talks, when she goes back to Croatia, she says something that, you know, that this language that existed in her head, in her memories, in her dreams, mm-hmm, suddenly comes rushing back. You know, like she remembers it from her childhood, but she hasn't used it in 10 years. Mm-hmm. And so when she gets back to Croatia and she starts using it again, she's a little rusty. Mm-hmm. But it feels good. It's like, you know, it's like a nostalgic thing. It's like something just coming back. It's like sometimes I walk in a room and I get a smell and it reminds me of something. Oh. And I imagine the feeling of her using her language that she hasn't used was much like that.
Yes, yeah. 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 I mean, you mentioned smells are huge in this, yeah. You know, it brings emotions, memories,
yeah.
Music, you know, I remember, I don't remember what time was that, but I remember if I hear music, I know what my mental state was at that time, and what I was doing at that time, and who was I hanging with at that time, you know.
She really hits on the fact that these things are language in themselves as, mm-hmm, well, and that...
And speaking of language, let me ask you this. Did it bother you that in some cases she didn't translate of some of the Croatian
words? I love that she was using Croatian. I actually looked up a lot of the words, mm-hmm, when I came across a Croatian phrase, because at the beginning she was explaining them. Mm-hmm. She would say the phrase or spell it out in Croatian,
mm-hmm, yeah,
and then explain what it was.
Yeah.
As she went on, she stopped doing that, and I enjoyed it more.
Cool.
Because I felt like I was in the moment with, mm-hmm, her, and it got me in that mindset. And then I would look up the words and see what it was said.
Because when I was reading, I was thinking, and I think I even made a note. I got to ask Mike if he enjoyed that or not. Because, yeah, I don't know if I couldn't imagine that. Why would you enjoy or why you wouldn't enjoy? You know what I mean? Because I knew what she was talking about.
Right, and that's something I asked you. Did you understand that stuff, even though it was? It's technically a different language. It's Croatian versus Slovene, but it's in the same family.
Exactly, it's a Slavic language. So, you know, and I would see why that would bother you. But then I thought to myself, okay, if this would be in Spanish and I would reading, it wouldn't bother me at all. It would be a nice addition, you know. Well, obviously, if the whole paragraph would be there and it would be a important thing, then I'd be like, shit, this needs to change.
You know? I don't think we do enough of that anymore. In American literary history, you know, back like when Hemingway was writing, or even like T.S. Eliot. I don't know if you know who T.S. Eliot is, but those guys and, you know, the girls writing at that time, they would add French into the book and not translate it. Mm-hmm. They would add some Spanish into the book, not translate it. Because... why do you need to? Mm-hmm. You know, if you want to learn about it, there's other books out there. Right. Now we have the internet.
Yeah.
You can look that up. And it provides a certain kind of reality to the book. So I really enjoyed that she did that.
Well, you said we are missing this in English literature. This is the English one, too.
Yeah, because it is. You know. Absolutely.
And I've underlined this. It's page 188. It's nothing. And she said... that was our train. We arrived at a tram stop, just as a full car pulled away and we were alone on the platform. Is this the English word tram? Is this used commonly in US or?
I mean, it's usually like a subway or like a rail car.
Okay,
so train.
You guys don't use
tram. We do use tram occasionally, though. Mm. Tram is usually an above ground, like going through a city, though.
Okay, yes.
So we do use that.
Okay, so my point here is I underlined because this is what it's used in Croatia. It's tram, that it's in a city inside.
Right.
And there is a good band that it's called Tram 11.
Okay.
And this was just for interesting, because this is They're the biggest hip-hop group in Croatia in the 90s. And the Tram 11 was the... No, I don't know. I never lived in Zagreb. But it was the tram that went from, I think, Vukovar or something. I'm not sure. But it went through the Zagreb and I guess to a home where these band members lived in.
Yeah.
So that reminded me of that. When they were hopped on the tram or whatever. So it was called Tram 11.
Yeah. How do you pronounce this TRG?
What do you say? Oh, Turk. Turk.
Yeah.
Turk. That's
does she? It was like a park or a square.
Yeah,
or something.
Yeah, it's a square. Yeah. Turk.
But that was interesting about there was that cemetery there, and then they moved it.
Oh, Zidboli, the wall of pain, right?
Yeah, yeah. Going back to talking about how you can't forget war. Well, they're trying to forget it. They're moving the monument.
Exactly. Yeah.
They're saying that's too depressing. We got to put it up in the cemetery.
Yeah. And that's on the same thing, on the same page, when they're talking about what they're studying. And he said, I'm studying finances, which is like in Balkan, everybody studies finances.
Yeah.
Even though it's weird if you ask me, because Europe is bad with finances and all this, but everybody studies, you know, everybody's big economic philosophers or whatever. And then he asked her and she said English. And he says, English, you still haven't gotten the hang of it.
Yeah.
And then she said, not the language, literature and stuff.
Yeah.
And why I underlined it, because if I ask you and you say you're studying English, I'll be like, you're studying the language?
Right.
You know, I never...
You should know it.
You should know it. Why are you studying this? But, you know, people never will... I don't think about, you know, you're studying literature, you're studying writing, you know, this and that.
Yeah.
Which that was kind of... I'm not going to say eye-opener, I knew about it, but...
Well,
that was interesting, too, because she was studying English, which Sarah Novich, she is constantly studying English.
Yes.
Her first language is American Sign Language.
Yeah.
But in the book, her boyfriend, Brian, he was studying that, I think it was like some tribe in South America that developed their own form of sign language. And I imagine to her... She feels like, you know, with her first language being American Sign Language, that it would be nice to have someone try to understand her more.
Yeah.
And we've tried to do this, you know, reading her book, and a lot of other people have tried to do this. You know, we talked about that in the beginning, but that was an interesting choice for her to have him study something like that.
Correct.
Because I imagine that was from a personal place.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, when she talked about him studying that, she said that sign language that they were using developed naturally. It was, like, completely spontaneous and outside of any reason or anything. But she also says that her and Luca created this language, Kringlish, where, you know, they would go back and forth. They kind of like you and Matea speak to each other. You know, you'll be speaking in Slovene for... a minute, and then you'll switch to English, and then you'll go back to Slovene, and it's...
Yeah, you know. It depends on the situation and what's happening or whatever.
What you're trying to describe.
Yeah.
And
that's interesting that it's like she describes it as their own personal language that kind of happened just organically.
Yes. Yeah. And I think you're right, this whole book, it's a lot of language-based.
Yeah.
Because she's basically the Sarah Novich, the writer. She's coming from three different languages, you know.
Yeah.
And that's what she's writing. And I think she does a great job. Like, she connects. It's kind of, I'm not gonna say we know her personally now, but she gives that feeling of, oh, okay. She makes the character Anna super personal.
I agree 100%. Yeah, I think she really, even though she didn't have those experiences as a child in Zagreb and, you know, over in Croatia during the war, I think she really does a good job writing her own personality into Anna. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I don't know Sarah Novich very personally.
Yeah,
surprisingly, we didn't look her up during this because I felt like when I was reading Anna's story, I was reading Sarah's story, because I think when she went to Croatia, because she mentions in the back that she visited Croatia when she was older, and she learned the language, or you know, as much as she could about the language. She didn't learn the language, but she learned as much as you can
through the stories and whatever. Yeah,
right. But I really think she translated those personal experiences that she had into this story.
Yeah.
And that was really wonderful. Like, I think she did a great job with that.
Yeah.
I think that's a good place to end. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so too.
Thanks for listening to Between Pages with Mike and Dula.